This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. With 14 so-called militiamen charged within the past 2 weeks in a kidnap plot against Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, it has not been difficult to make certain critical connections.
Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what.
Stand back and stand by, he told them. Hate groups heard the president's words not as a rebuke, but as a rallying cry, as a call to action.
That was Whitmer, and yes, there has been action. Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer Militia inciting violence in Portland, the neo-Nazi Adam Waffen Division, now rebranded as the National Socialist Order, linked to 5 murders, alleged teen shooter Kyle Rittenhouse, unaffiliated but taking up arms with militiamen in Kenosha, Wisconsin. This week, secret tapes surfaced of a neo-Nazi group calling itself The Base, planning recruitment of current and former military. All with dog whistles, retweets, and sometimes direct incitement from the president. So, yes, easy to connect those dots. In a moment, we will look at how these groups themselves connect to fellow travelers and just among themselves. But first, let's consider yet a third kind of connection. The language we use to put a name to the various activities and pathologies on the violent far right. What these locked and loaded paramilitaries call themselves is militias, and that term has taken hold in the media, to Gretchen Whitmer's great chagrin. They're not militias, she tweeted this week. They're domestic terrorists endangering and intimidating their fellow Americans. University at Albany professor Sam Jackson, who studies anti-government extremism, agrees that whatever the Wolverine Watchmen are, it sure isn't the militias our founders envisioned in the Constitution.
It seems that those who wrote the Constitution had this clear idea that there would be a standing military, and then there would be this militia force, which was organized by the states, and the federal government had the authority under certain conditions to temporarily take control of those militia units.
Kind of like what is now the Army National Guard.
Exactly. Over the course of a number of decades, what was originally described as the militia, through a series of incremental changes in law, became the National Guard.
But what has sprung up over the past 30 or 40 years sure isn't that. These are unregulated paramilitaries, not only independent of government, but often hostile to government.
Exactly. These are people who have adopted the label of militia, pointing back to those founding documents, in order to legitimize their paramilitary activity.
Yeah, they called themselves militias. Did the press just get suckered into accepting this constitutionally memorialized term?
I don't know if I would go that far. I think it's reasonable for the media and for other observers to use labels that these types of actors create for themselves, as long as the use of those labels comes with an explanation of what they mean and how they're being used.
On the other hand, there are other words that do convey so much more. Vigilante comes to mind.
When I think of vigilantes, I think of Wild West, frontier towns, posses taking it upon themselves to enforce the law. And while it may be true that some of these actors, like those who are accused in Michigan in this plot to kidnap the governor, while it may be true that they think of themselves as trying to enforce the law, I think that vigilante maybe gives a little bit too much credence to that.
And just terrorist?
Because of how language works, we label acts as terrorism, And then we sort of adopt that same label to describe people who commit those acts. There's a little bit of potential confusion there, though, because if someone lies one time, do we call that person a liar, or do they need to have a habit of lying before we call them a liar? Does someone need to commit an act of terrorism to be a terrorist? Do they need to just plot an act of terrorism? Do they just need to express admiration for or support for an act of terrorism?
Strictly speaking, terrorism is political violence that is committed in order to focus attention on the cause. So an assassination, for example, isn't necessarily terrorism, but something designed to terrorize the public at large, for sure. Do you know where these Michigan guys fall in?
The question is, would the kidnapping be an attempt to communicate to other people involved in government, hey, this fate will happen to you as well if you also engage in similar sorts of activity, or if they were much more instrumentally just thinking, this governor is a problem, therefore we will kidnap this one person?
Can you give me a roster of the most prominent militia organizations?
I'll offer a caveat before I do that, though, which is I tend to think of this as a movement rather than focusing in on groups. When scholars talk about movements, we often think about coalitions that are united by similar ideas or similar goals. The difference between that and an organization or a group is that groups have relatively clear boundaries about who is a member versus not a member. But social movement scholars, for example, would talk about a social movement as being made up of multiple groups and independent actors who are working together to promote similar goals. I do want to push back a little bit on something, which is that some of these militia groups are explicitly white supremacist. And I think that that is by and large not true. In the 90s and in the historical predecessors of these militia groups, there was more explicit racism. But as we saw the second wave of this movement emerge in 2008 or so, we really saw a rejection of racism. And this is not, oh, I'm a white nationalist, not a white supremacist. This is people who are prominent and important within the movement saying, we reject racism full stop.
Such as the Oath Keepers.
Exactly. So Oath Keepers is a really prominent group within this movement now. Oath Keepers formed in 2009, and they actually went through the trouble of writing up formal bylaws for their organization. And one of the clauses in their bylaws is that they prohibit anyone who has ever previously been affiliated with a racist organization from joining their group. And in fact, the president and founder of Oath Keepers, when people ask him this question, his response is always, I'm a quarter Mexican, how could I possibly be racist? Now, this is a little bit more complicated, of course, than these actors would like to portray it, because there is still bigotry within their ranks. They would say, we're not opposed to all immigrants, we're opposed to those who come in the wrong way. We're not opposed to all Muslims, we're opposed to radical Muslims. That distinction breaks down a little bit when you look at their actual actions. However, I think it's really important to recognize that white supremacist groups, organizations, and movements perceive a racial identity and they organize around that racial identity. For those in militia groups, the identity that they're organizing around is a patriotic one or a nationalist one, not a racial one.
Except when it isn't. Tell me about the Boogaloo movement.
Boogaloo fundamentally refers to this idea that America is soon to face a second civil war. It refers to this internet meme of anytime you're describing the second version of something, you call it the thing to Electric Boogaloo, referencing this awful 1980s movie. So for the Boogaloo folks, they think that soon we're going to see Civil War II Electric Boogaloo. What gets complicated is there are anti-government elements that are explicitly organized around that anti-government stance, and others who are explicitly organized around a sense that this second civil war that's coming, this will be the race war that we've been anticipating for so long.
What about the three percenters? We've discussed them on the show. Where do they fit into this ecosystem?
Within the Patriot Militia movement, the second wave that began in 2008, there are two dominant factions. One is Oath Keepers, and the second is Three Percenters. Unlike Oath Keepers, Three Percenters is not a formal organization with clear membership lists or anything like that. Instead, Three Percenters refers to this dubious notion that 3% of those who lived in the British colonies in the late 18th century fought back against the British and won America's independence. And people who adopt this language believe that if 3% of Americans today resist the tyrannical government, they can also defeat tyranny. What we saw was this language around 3%ers emerged around the 2008 point, and people around the country started adopting that rhetoric and the related symbol, the Roman numerals 3 surrounded by a circle of stars. And these different organizations that have incorporated 3%ers into their name in some way don't necessarily have any relationship with other groups that have 3%ers in their name. And in fact, there have been some, call them internecine squabbles between different actors who adopt 3%ers rhetoric and symbols.
3% is 10 million people in the United States. We're not at that threshold, are we?
No, although the gentleman who came up with the idea of the 3%ers, his name is Mike Vanderbo, he used to say, we only need 3% of gun owners. And there are 100 million gun owners in America, so that's 3 million people. What is an uncomfortable coincidence, I hope. People who study gun ownership in America have found that 3% of gun owners own something like 50% of all of the guns held in private hands in America.
Oh, sweet mother of God, I hope those are different 3%.
I really hope that it's a very unfortunate coincidence.
Sam, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sam Jackson is a professor of emergency preparedness, homeland security, and cybersecurity at the University at Albany.